Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to an encore edition of Soundcheck.
Look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it. You play the guitar on MTV. That ain't working, that's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. In its battle against illegal file sharing, the recording industry has often turned to colleges and universities to help catch students who are swapping songs over campus networks. But the industry got a surprise when it subpoenaed the University of Oregon in September. It asked the school to identify 17 students who traded songs on a file sharing network from Sting, Journey, and this band, Dire Straits. But the university said no, and they said no through the state attorney general. New York Times national legal correspondent Adam Liptak has been covering the story. He joins us today. Adam, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you, John.
Putting aside for the moment the even more surprising fact that there are 19 and 20-year-old college kids file-swapping Sting and Journey songs, what do you make of Oregon, the University of Oregon, standing up to the RIAA, the industry group on this?
Well, it's a funny mixed thing, because on the one hand, the record industry, whatever you think of its tactics or whatever you think of its suing its customers, probably has most of the better legal arguments. At the same time, there's something heartening about seeing a university stand up for its own students rather than just rolling over, as has been the case in literally hundreds of at colleges and universities around the country.
So the RIAA has done this sort of thing with many colleges and universities.
It happens all the time.
And sometimes the schools balk a little bit, but in every case they've complied in the past.
Yeah, it happens sort of on two levels. There's an informal level now where the record industry says, we've identified an IP address, an Internet Protocol address, and we don't know what student it is. You are, for these purposes, the ISP, the Internet Service Provider. We want you, please, to give your student a letter. Mm-hmm. And that letter will allow the student to settle the lawsuit for $3,000 or something like that. And universities routinely pass those letters along, but don't literally turn around and identify the student to the recording industry. If they decide not to do that, what the record industry does is go to court and sue a John Doe, or in this case, 17 John Does. And having filed that lawsuit, they then issue a subpoena to the university saying, we've got this lawsuit going, we need to find out who the student is who goes with this IP address. And the University of Oregon has really come out swinging and, interestingly, has turned to the state attorney general, which seems to be a completely new matter where we're now having the top law enforcement official of a state standing up for the university and the students.
Now, isn't there something ironic about the Oregon State Attorney General taking the side of a university that is apparently protecting kids who have done something illegal?
Somebody here almost certainly violated the law. The university says, don't make us the cop. In some cases, the IP address will only tell us the dorm room, and it may be more than one student. It shouldn't be up to us to try to figure out which student it is. It's not our job. We're an institution of higher education. We're not, you know, we're not Verizon.
Right. That seems like a very kind of, you know, measured and reasonable response. How did the RIAA respond to that?
The RIAA says this. It says, tell us how else to figure this out. You guys are literally an ISP. You guys are literally doing the same thing Verizon does. You're running a computer network. This is the only way for us to figure out who it is who's breaking the law. And I guess then the question is, should we stomach some amount of lawbreaking rather than intrude on what is a pretty profound relationship between a university and its students?
The University of Oregon has invoked right to privacy as one of the main reasons for not complying, and as you suggest, Adam, that is we as Americans consider that a pretty fundamental right.
And there's a federal law, of course, that makes student records protected. The courts have almost uniformly said that Federal Privacy Act for student records doesn't apply to this kind of what they call directory information, name, rank, and serial information. But that is still a somewhat open question.
All right. We're speaking with Adam Liptak. He's the national legal correspondent of the New York Times. The RIAA, which is the record industry's own group, suing 17 students at the University of Oregon, attempting to sue them. They need to get their names from the university, who have balked at that and have enlisted the support of the state's attorney general. Does that the presence of the attorney general make it any more likely that the University of Oregon can succeed in standing up to the RIAA where no one else has been able to?
When you talk to the sort of civil liberties groups in this area, like the Electronic Frontier Foundation, they will say that this is one of the first times when it's a fair fight, when it's a level playing field, when it's not, you know, enormous companies holding the threat of really catastrophic damage awards against, you know, a 20-year-old kid. So the fact that you now have serious lawyers on both sides litigating this seriously means that while the result might not be different, the issues will get flushed out and we'll get a much more definitive answer to some of these open questions.
All right, now, we're talking about the University of Oregon at the moment, but there is an interesting case study that you wrote about in the same state. Tell us about the case of Portland State.
Yeah, Portland State got an almost identical subpoena. It had an IP address in there. They wrote back without even informing the students. Well, we don't know who it was. It was either one roommate or a second roommate. Here's both of their names. Go nuts. And the record industry came down on both of them like a ton of bricks. And one of them was guilty, and one of them ultimately settled. The second one wasn't guilty. But nonetheless, the university insisted on a $4,500 settlement. And only when this student and her family hired a lawyer and spent literally weeks pulling together evidence did they finally back down. So the upshot of the Portland State action was to put a wholly innocent student in a really bad position.
Well, it sounds like it put that student in the position of having the burden of proof.
Exactly.
Of her own innocence.
Exactly. No, this is really a guilty until proven innocent kind of attitude the record industry takes. Now, you know, in many cases, if they have proof that you're doing file sharing on your computer, you're the only person with access to the computer, that's pretty good evidence that you're guilty, but that's not true in every case.
Mm. Now, how successful has the RIAA strategy? I mean, I know in the court of public opinion, it has been a disaster for them.
Yeah, it really depends on what you mean by successful. Have they gotten lots and lots of settlements? Yeah. And does it add up to real money? Yeah. $3,000 times 10 or 20,000 settlements is a lot of money. But are they stopping file sharing? That's very hard to know because you don't know what would happen but for this campaign.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of file sharing continues to go up. But is it possible it would have gone up faster if people weren't in fear of these lawsuits? It's possible. It you know, lots of people think that it's a really poor business strategy to go suing your own customers.
Well, and what the RIAA says in its own defense is, you know, a couple of years ago before we started all this, people were, you know, just doing it and they didn't even realize it was illegal. Now they realize it's illegal.
They call it, and there's truth in this, they say it's a deterrence and education program. So they say they're not really in it for the money. What they're in it for is to scare people, the same reason, you know, that you might drive 60, 65, but you're not going to drive 70 because you don't want to take the chance of getting a ticket, and that it's a way of educating people that this truly is illegal. And they're right. Most of this truly is illegal.
All right. So the RIAA still going after students and very often using the universities and colleges as an intermediary. Can the case of the University of Oregon refusing to divulge names, can that change things? What do you think will happen next?
Well, as I say, the university has most the record industry has most of the better legal arguments, but we're now seeing the University of Oregon lay down every possible issue here about whether it can be put to the burden, whether of responding and distinguishing among the guilty and the innocent, whether the university's tactics, which are quite aggressive in doing the investigations that it does, whether some of that might get some traction. If it does, it might really change the landscape here.
All right. Well, we'll just have to wait and see. Adam Liptak is the national legal correspondent of the New York Times. His article on NewYorkTimes.com can be found through a link on the soundcheck page of our website. Adam, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you. She walked right through the door.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the program. Soundcheck's technical director is Irene Trudell. Our program is produced by Brian Wise and Joel Meyer. Our executive producer is Gisele Regatow, and I'm John Schaefer. Be with us next time at this time for Soundcheck here at 93.9 FM WNYC.